Good morning, everybody. I'll just move this. It's great to be here, isn't it? Really great. And thanks to Terry and the band. What a wonderful time of worship as well. So thank you. So we're thinking more and more each week about living for Jesus in our community, about what it means to be part of this church as well. And if you remember, we had a diagram with four different things that we suggested. One, coming to church regularly. We think that's the most fundamental, important thing. Belonging to a small group. Belonging to a mission team, and that's what I'm going to be talking about today, and also belonging to a discipleship triplet. And if you want to know more about triplets, please see me afterwards, or if you want to be in one. Okay, so Matthew chapter 4, verse 13, so a little bit before what Molly read amazingly well, thank you, really great reading. It says about Jesus leaving Nazareth, he went and lived in Capernaum. And then on verse 17, from that time on, Jesus began to preach, "Repent, for the kingdom of heaven is near." And so I went to Israel a couple of years ago, as some of you know, so I thought I'd show you what Capernaum looks like nowadays and the synagogue where Jesus actually preached. Well, this is the site of it anyway. Beryl, if we can have the first one up. Now, I'm not the best of photographers. Oop, I'm better than that. Ah, lovely, thank you. So that is the ruins of the synagogue actually in Capernaum. Now, it wouldn't have looked like that in Jesus' day because that is a rebuild. But if we can go to the, well, we can see the dark stone at the front. That is that's the stone that Capernaum was made out of, that dark black basalt. Thank you, Beryl. Wonderful. And then the second one, please. And then, actually, you can see over on the left-hand, well, to the right of the tree, but down the bottom, you can see the dark stone. Brilliant, thank you. That is that would have been the actual, from the temple where, the synagogue, where Jesus preached. So the foundation for this slightly more modern temple was actually the foundation of the synagogue where Jesus would have preached in Capernaum. Now, next one, please. Capernaum, it was just a small place on the shore of Lake Galilee. And so these are the ruins of some of the houses. Again, that dark stone, the houses would have been small, very humble, and very dark, because obviously they didn't have glass in the windows. They would have presumably had doors, well, yes, it would, but it would have been very small, sort of fairly mean existence, really. Archaeologists have found that all the fishermen lived in one area together. All the people of a different trade, say the tanners who work with leather, they would have worked in a different, they lived in a different area. The weavers lived in a different area still, because of course they found artifacts as they've done their digs, and so they've discovered. So the fact that these communities of trades would have lived really cheek by jowl with each other, so very close communities, but they all lived on the shore of Lake Galilee. And this is what I find so exciting, because it says Jesus was walking on the shore when he came across these disciples. And this is what Lake Galilee, Beryl, this is what Lake Galilee looks like today. I'm quite proud of that one. but how amazing, isn't it, that Jesus walked along this very shore. He would have seen the hills in the distance, which have not changed in all those hundreds of years. The sky would sometimes have looked like that when Jesus walked. The lion and the lamb that we've been singing about and praising him, he was a man who walked amongst us. And he walked on the shore of Lake Galilee, and we know plenty of stories about Lake Galilee, but that's what it actually looks like today, from the very edge of Capernaum itself. And that's where he called these two sets of brothers. First of all, Andrew and Simon, who became Peter, and then James and John. Simon and Andrew actually in the act of fishing. There aren't any fishing boats there nowadays, but when they were actually fishing, Jesus said, "Come, follow me, and I will make you." The older version says fishers of men. That Molly read a slightly more modern one, fishes of people or something. But the one that we know very well, some of us. Come, follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. Why ask fishermen rather than tanners, rather than weavers, rather than, I don't know, why ask them? Why not ask farmers? We don't know. But we can guess that part of it may be that fishermen were used to a hard life. They were used to real challenges. They were used to sacrifice. They were used to persistence. They were used to having to rely on nature, having to look for the signs in nature of the sea, of the wind, etc., of the clouds. They lived closely to nature, as I suppose lots of them did in those days. Didn't have all the technology to distract us from God's beautiful world. But he called these four fishermen, not very well educated. And he didn't say, come with me to Jerusalem, where all the power is, where you'll get the glory, where you'll get fame, where the center of the Jewish religion is. He said, no, we're going to come and follow me, and we're going to stay here. It's a bit like saying, no, we won't go to London. We'll stick in North Devon, that backwater. It's a bit like that. We're going to be here. We're going to be amongst people that you know, people that you can relate to. We're not seeking glory, but we are going to make fishers of men. They wouldn't have seen this sign. This is just a bit of daftness that I put in. These signs were everywhere around the lake. And it just made me really funny that on the same sign it says, you're not allowed to have guns or knives down the bottom left, but neither are you allowed to have short sleeve t-shirts or wear shorts, as if they're sort of equal in sinfulness, as it were. But those were signs all around the lake. Obviously, no swimming, no picnics, no cycling, no et cetera, et cetera. You can see. There we are. Now, they were in their boats, and I don't know if I've shown you these pictures, but I found the next thing profoundly touching. This is a first century fishing boat. It's a bit dark, isn't it? That was excavated from underneath the sand. It had been preserved miraculously, and I just wonder whether that was God's doing, that he wanted this one preserved for us followers of Jesus to see even more clearly the sort of boat that we read about and that the fishermen would have had. Now, this boat is all held together by this sort of skeleton, because obviously if it weren't held together with all this steel, it would just disintegrate. So fragile and yet so miraculously preserved. And the next one, please, Beryl. That's just a bit of more of a close-up to show you that they're just ordinary branches and bits of wood, not nice, neat planks. And as I looked at that, I thought, actually, that's amazing. It's a picture of us as a church, isn't it? It's not all neat. We're not all uniform. We're all different bits of wood that have been stuck into this to make a boat that actually will be usable and will be available for fishing for men, for finding other people and drawing them into God's kingdom, drawing them into faith. So, and then the next one, please. Now, you won't be able to read that very easily, so I'm just going to read it because I just found it so interesting. The boat is made mostly of oak and cedar together with other types of wood, some recycled from disused boats, so recycling in Jesus' time. Thus far, laboratory tests have found 11 types of wood in the boat. Some were used to build the hull, others were added in smaller pieces later to replace missing parts or repair faulty ones. And the result is an intricate wooden patchwork vessel. Intricate, hopefully not wooden, we're not wood, but intricate vessel we are as people. And I find that really amazing. And Jesus calls the men to lay down what is familiar. He says, come and follow me, and that will mean leaving behind what is familiar. Leaving behind your nets and your fishing that you're used to, that give you confidence, that give you status maybe, that give you identity. Leave that behind. Come and follow me. Let me set the agenda now. Let me give you a new identity. Come and do things that you've never dreamt of doing. Say things that you've never dreamt of saying. Hear and see things that you've never dreamt of hearing and seeing. That's what he called those men to. And of course, that is what he calls us to. Each and every one of us. Each day. But maybe for some, you're just wondering about following this this person, Jesus. You're wondering about it. You're starting to believe in him and thinking, yeah, this could be true, but actually, oh, I'm not sure. And now Shirley says, oh, you've got to leave the familiar behind. Now, he doesn't call all of us to leave our homes, to leave our jobs, as he called the apostles. But he does call us to leave some of the familiar stuff behind. And it was amazing because in the prayer meeting just now, somebody prayed about leaving behind the hurts and the unforgiveness and the sin. And actually, that's the equivalent of the nets that they had to leave behind. That he may be calling some of us to leave behind the hurts and the difficulties that we've had in life, the wrong ways that people have treated us. Because he says, come, follow me. Come and learn from me. Come and follow me because I will heal you up and I will use you to be a fisher of men. So he said, the first is an instruction, come and follow me. So that's the first thing that we can, and each morning it's great just to wake up and say, yeah, I choose, Lord. I choose to come and follow you this day. I want to be with you. I want to walk with you. I want to hear your voice. But the second thing is that he says, he makes a promise. And this is glorious. I will make you fishers of men. Not you have to screw up the courage and you have to make yourself into a wonderful evangelist. I will make you fishers of men. You see, it's God's work in us. It's God's work in us that then draws other people to himself. Of course we have a part to play, cooperating with him, spending time with him, as we're always saying. But actually there's no substitute. Wanting to be obedient to him, wanting to please him, wanting to see what he wants us to do and then getting on and doing it. But come, I will make you fishers of men. So he's asking us to do the same, just as the disciples did. So I've got some really natty three W's. They watched Jesus. And for some of you, it may be that actually you're in the process of just watching other Christians, how they worship, how they pray, what they say. So they watched, they walked alongside Jesus for those years, but also they went. And they didn't just go, of course, at the end of his life or when he had died, when he'd risen from the dead. They didn't just go then because Jesus sent them out way before that. And I've heard two stories just recently. I want to tell you one of somebody who is very new to faith. He would say it himself. He's somebody in our congregation, and he said that he'd been taught, and he says that God is just making a difference in his life, giving him peace. And he'd said to somebody just recently, what you need is God in your life. He said, I've got God. He's made a difference. That's what you need. Fisher of men. Hallelujah. It's as simple as that. For sometimes with some folk, they simply need to hear that message. You need God in your life. He's made such a difference to me. You need him. But I want to talk because actually what happened when Jesus sent them out? Did he send them out by themselves? No, he sent them in pairs. And later on we see them working in groups. You see, it's so much easier to go out on God's mission with other people. It's quite scary evangelizing by yourself. Some people have got a real gift of it in this church, which is wonderful. But the vast majority of us find it quite difficult. Now, I'm not saying we stop doing that. No, of course we don't. But actually, we have such great opportunities in this church because there's so much mission going on. But I'm going to mention the mission teams in a minute. And every single one of them could do with more people. Every single one. And this isn't for you to join up under compulsion because you feel guilty. It's as God's Spirit leads you. So I'll come on to that in a moment. But I just want to say again, it is so much easier to do mission with other people. The simplest way of doing mission, the really simplest one, with one other person, or maybe two or three, is to gossip the gospel. Mike Edson taught me that many, many years ago. Simply sitting in those places where we've already written on our pieces of paper, maybe sitting, walking, talking, running with fellow Christians and simply talking about God, talking about faith, talking about what happened on Sunday, what an amazing service it was, etc. Now, that happened to me many years ago in the staff room with somebody, it was Andrew Moore, who's the church warden now at Goodley. We were 20-year-olds, really excited about God, and so whenever we got together in the staff room, we would chat about the services and what was happening, and we did not know that someone was listening in. And she told us later she would go to the staff room hoping that the two of us were in there. How glorious is that? Evangelizing without even realizing it. So I would really say, you know, we're to make the most of every opportunity. And the second story I wanted to tell you was that somebody just told me this week that she'd had an amazing talk about Jesus with someone, a young man. But this young man said, the previous day, he had overheard a conversation where people were talking about Jesus. You see, we have no idea what seeds we're sowing. Being fishers of men. Okay, so gossip the gospel, make the most of the opportunities. I want to finish by talking about the mission teams that are in this church. So I'm going to quickly run through them, and I'm going to make, and so it is going to be quick, and if we'd been better organized, maybe we would have had stalls so that you could join up if you haven't joined one already. See, if we are following Jesus, then we too want to be fishers of men. We want to be people who will bring others to faith. So, if you think you've got you really care about elderly people and them coming to faith, then you need to see, Angela, could you just stand up because you're involved in it? Thank you. I know there are others as well. Okay, sit down. Thank you. That's for room service and also holiday at home. Wonderful work that we do with elderly people. Young children, if you're really concerned about young children or their mums, Rosie, are you around? Is she around? She's in the creche. Okay, well then Sharon will have to be her understudy, having just given up the job. But you need to see Sharon. And similarly, if you want to work with school-age children, there's lots of schools work to do, not just during the daytime, although most of it is, but also there's Messy Church too. Beryl, if you'd stand up, you need more on your Messy Church team. That's for young children. Teenagers, obviously Mike is around somewhere, he was, yeah. And Mike needs more people to help with youth group in the evenings or youth sometimes on a Sunday morning. But actually, how encouraging it would be if you went up to Mike and said, give me the names of two young people that I can just be praying for. I can't get to a youth club, or it's really not my thing, or I don't think you probably need me on a Sunday morning, but actually I can pray. Give me two or three young people's names. I'll pray for them. People on an estate with no church, if you feel a burden about that, then Jane and Mike and me. Yeah, Jane's right at the back there. She's the person to see, or me, for Goral coffee mornings on a Monday morning. Now, I know a lot of these are during the day, but also there's CAP. Now, CAP with Jeremy and Jane. Jane's standing again. So Jane's just started a release group. Jeremy runs CAP. They need volunteers to go and befriend families who are really down on their luck, really struggling, and they just need friends. And so if you feel, actually, I could do that. I'm a working person, but I could befriend someone and go around maybe once a week for a while and just get alongside people. Go and see Jane and Jeremy. And Jane's also started a release group, which she can tell you about, for people with addictions. Interface. I don't know whether we've got anyone from Interface here who works with Interface. Is Alexis around? Oh, yes, Linda, thank you. And Alexis, yeah, thank you. Saturdays for homeless people. You know probably most of these, but I just want to say, search for, you know, for God, for what you should be doing. It could be street pastors at night, looking after teenagers and young 20s in the town. Look, ask God what you could be, where you could be serving, what he wants you to do. I've nearly finished. People seeking God. You might have a real burden for people just to find Jesus. And so Alpha runs, and there's Marilyn. If you can come and help with that, bring somebody, pray for it, make a cake, etc. And I'm nearly at the end because there's so much going on. Chris Oldham and various others run a group called Explore, which is, there we are, thanks Chris, quite short but sweet, which is for people wanting to find out more about faith, really, but doing creative things in and practical things together. So a sort of a friendship group, but also a fellowship group. I've got to the end. I wanted to try and rush because I know we've got Gambia to listen to as well. How fitting that we're going to now go into feedback about a mission team that went to Gambia. So I just want to say, Jesus says to all of us, come and follow me and I will make you fishers of men. Okay, Gambia team. Pat.